there instead, Eve wondered, full of dread. Torture wasn't common among the Germans and their prisoners, even for spies. Interrogation, beatings, imprisonment, yes. And of course there was the looming fear of execution. But though you might be shot, you wouldn't have your fingernails pulled out first. Everyone in the network knew that. Yet what if they had made an exception for Violette? Eve didn't voice that thought, knowing Lily was already in agony. So was Eve whenever she remembered Violette's hands tending to her so gently, trying to warm the steel instruments. Without Violette, Eve would be stuck right now with René's seed consuming her. Or she would be dead, because without Violette's expertise, she'd have been mad enough to try any potion, any poison that would do the job. Eve owed Violette so much. They'll be questioning her. Lily's shoulders sagged as she paced. Antoine says they have nothing definite. She wasn't caught with papers. Her name was given up when a Brussels boy in the network got taken. All he knew was her name. So the Huns will question her. But if they dig for a weak spot on Violette, all they'll find is bedrock. Eve imagined Violette sitting across a rickety table from a German interrogator, turning her head so the light flashed, impenetrable, off her spectacles. No, Violette would not be an easy subject for questioning. As long as they do not torture her. If I could do something, Lily fumed. Get out and start culling some new information, and there will be reports to collect. Her voice was steely. I will not lose anyone else to the Huns. I'd rather be stood against a wall and shot myself than lose one more. Don't be foolish. Eve found herself adopting Violette's bossy sternness, taking her wayward leader in hand since their spectacled lieutenant wasn't here to do it. Let me see what I can find out at Lulete. You might not be at Lulete much longer, the thought whispered. With the network compromised, Eve and Lily might very easily find themselves recalled from Lille. It would be the logical step, but Eve couldn't stop now to fantasize about leaving Lille and never seeing René Bourlelon again. For the moment you're still here, so keep listening. But there was nothing about Violette to be heard in the sea of gossip. No one could talk of anything but the Cavell execution. German officers were either grim-faced or blustering over their schnapps.
Damn it, the woman was a spy, Eve heard a captain sputter. They're supposed to drench our handkerchiefs over a filthy spy, just because she was female?
War is not what it used to be, a colonel countered. Spies in skirts. Putting a woman in front of a firing squad, it's shame on the fatherland. This is not how we conduct war. Spying is a craven business. There must be spies in Lille. The entire region is cursed. There was one uncovered in Brussels weeks before Cavell's execution. That one a woman, too.
Eve pricked up her ears, but nothing more was said of Violette. Please do not let her end up like Cavell. It all made René chuckle later that night as he stood naked at the sideboard, before a carafe of liquid as green as a Peridot. Recently he had introduced Eve to absinthe.
What romantics Germans are, going on as if there's any honorable way to conduct a war. War merely happens. The only thing that matters at the end of a war is who is alive and who is dead.
Not only that, Eve said, cross-legged in the sofa bed with a sheet drawn around her shoulders. It also matters who comes out poor and who comes out rich. That earned her an approving smile, as Eve had planned. Marguerite had had to evolve from the wide-eyed country girl he first took a fancy to. She'd gained a veneer of sophistication. She no longer spluttered when she drank champagne. She'd developed a grateful appreciation for the finer things in life that her lover took such pleasure in showing her. She was supple and eager in bed, and she adopted some of René's cynicisms, which made him smile because she parroted them so earnestly. Yes, Eve had grown Marguerite up in precisely calculated stages, and René seemed pleased with what he saw in his creation. I don't see why it's so terrible to want to prosper in wartime, Eve continued a bit defiantly, as if trying on René's profiteering airs and trying to justify them.
Who wants to be hungry? Who wants to be dressed in rags?
René balanced a silver-grated absinthe spoon and a sugar cube across each glass,
You're a clever girl, Marguerite. If the Germans think women are not clever enough or cunning enough to be spies, then they are dupes and fools.
Eve steered the conversation away from her own cleverness. They say the English are furious over Cavell's execution.
Furious, perhaps.
René dripped ice water over the sugar, so the cubes dissolved slowly into the absinthe.
But even more grateful, I imagine.
Why? Eve took her glass. La Fée Verte didn't make her hallucinate or chatter as she feared. René said that was nonsense from French vintners, jealous of losing business. But she still made sure to sip sparingly.
You haven't seen the casualty lists the English are facing, my pet. All those men dying in the trenches every month. Their splendid little war is into its second year now, and people are getting weary of blood. But when the Huns gun down an Englishwoman of good birth and unstained reputation, can there be anything more wholesome than a nurse? Then that's a jolt that will galvanize the home front nicely.
René sipped his absinthe, sliding back beneath the sheets.
So will the Germans execute that other spy? Eve dared to ask.
The woman caught in Brussels?
Not if they are clever. They won't want to feed the bad press. I wonder if this one is young and pretty.
René mused, looking at the light through the green jewel of his glass.
If she is, the English should hope the Hun shoot her. Even better than a middle-aged martyr like Cavell is a pretty martyr. Nothing to get public outrage fired up like a girl who's young, lovely, undead. Swallow that down, Marguerite, and come here. You've never had opium, have you? We should try it sometime. Coupling in an opium dream can be rather eye-opening.
But the spectre of Edith Cavell wasn't finished with them yet. When Eve returned to her own room that night, Lily sat awake at the rickety table, great purple shadows under her eyes. Interesting news from Uncle Edward, little Daisy. Have we been recalled? Eve's head was still slightly buzzing from the absinthe, though she'd managed to duck the prospect of opium. She wasn't taking any substance that might cause her to babble in front of René. Are they pulling us from Lille? Her head buzzed even more with hope, now that the moment had come. No. Lily hesitated, and Eve's heart fell. And at the same time, maybe. Exasperated, Eve unbuttoned her coat. Talk sense. Antoine brought the message direct from Uncle Edward. The decision to recall us was bruited about, but his mustachioed superior. That would be the bluff, gossip-leaking Major Allenton Eve remembered from her Folkestone days. Came down on the side of letting us continue, even though the Boche will be looking to unravel the network now they have one of us. Even so. Lily unwrapped a stub of cigarette from a handkerchief, fumbling for matches. It is Mustache's opinion that our excellent placement here makes it worth the risk. So we are ordered to keep our heads low and continue our work, at least for a few weeks longer. Risky, Eve admitted, even foolhardy. But wars were won by taking risks, and soldiers are the ones who shouldered the dangers. As soon as Eve agreed to take this job, she'd given the crown her life to spend. What was the use complaining now, much as she yearned to leave Lille and René behind? She dropped down on the edge of the bed, rubbing the grit from her eyes. So we continue, she said a trifle bitterly. Lily lit her cigarette stub. Perhaps not. Talk sense, Lily. Uncle Edward would never contradict a superior openly, but he has ways of making his disagreement known. Clearly he fought the decision to keep us in place, fought it hard. Without quite putting it into words, he makes it clear that he thinks it far too dangerous for us to continue in operation here. He fears that Violette will be executed like Cavell, and that we'll be caught and suffer the same fate. We might. Eve had lived with that fear so long, it seemed normal. The Fritzes are cracking down. It's not as if they've failed to notice that they have dozens of kilometers of front here, where they can't keep artillery functioning longer than a fortnight. Lily let out a long sigh of smoke. Uncle Edward thinks Mustache is an idiot, but can't countermand his direct orders. However,
The hint has come very obliquely that if we were to request a transfer from Lille, pleading exhaustion or nerves, he could make it happen. Eve stared. As if soldiers can simply beg off their orders. Ordinary soldiers, no. Those in our line of work are different. An asset on the verge of emotional breakdown cannot be relied upon. We just cause damage in place. It's far safer to yank us. So? For a moment, Eve let the heady vision swamp her. No more semi-starvation and German clocks and cool-skinned hands on her body. No more dreams of bullets in the back. No more danger. But that, too, carried a flip-side consequence. If we plead out, would they re-establish us elsewhere to work? Belgium, or... probably not. Lily flicked ash from her cigarette. We'd be the girls who fell apart under pressure. No one puts a cracked cup back on the table and trusts it to stay in one piece. Go home now and the fight would be done. However long this war went on, Eve's chance to contribute would be over. We should probably do it. Lily's tone was objective. Beg out. I trust Uncle Edward's instincts over mustaches any day. If he thinks the danger is too great, he's probably right. Yes, Eve acknowledged. But we have a direct order to stay, regardless. An order? And it's just for a few more weeks. If we keep our heads down, then once we're recalled, we'll be sent somewhere new to work. And we have been lucky so far. Lily shrugged thin shoulders. Better than lucky. We have been good. Eve let out a long breath, releasing the heady vision of home. Then I say we stick it out. At least a little longer. I decided that for myself already, but I didn't want to unfairly influence you. You're sure? Yes. That's settled then. Lily inspected her cigarette butt. Damn. I've been saving this for a fortnight, and all I got out of it was two good puffs. I can't tell you how I love this primitive life. Eve reached out, gripping Lily's free hand. Promise me you will be more careful. I worry about you. What's the use of worrying? Lily wrinkled her nose. Back in September, you know, I let the worrying get to me. I had a premonition of sorts. So strong I went to visit my family. I was convinced I had to see them while I could, one last time. When I left, I kept thinking, it's all over now. I'm going to be caught and shot. And nothing happened. Nothing at all. Worry is wasted time, little Daisy. Eve paused, choosing her words. What if Violette is forced to give up your name? Even if they force her to tell about me, they cannot find me. I'm a handful of water, running everywhere. Lily smiled. I'll vary my routine, change my roots, I promise. The smile faded. Mustache is right about one thing. This won't last much longer, of that I'm sure. There's been a big push through Champagne. They're sure to break through by the new year. We've only to hold on a little while more. Softly. And then Violette will be released. If they'll only give her a prison sentence, she can survive that. What if it isn't just a few months? Eve had only been in Lille for a matter of months, but it might as well be an eternity. What if this war lasts years? Then it's years, Lily said. What of it? What of it, indeed. And neither of them gave any more thought to pleading their way home. The news dropped into Eve's ear just a few days later via Commandant Hoffman and a pair of colonels, all well into their brandies. Not quite a nugget like the news of the Kaiser's visit, but important enough to make Eve's ears prick up. You're certain? Lily was back on her rounds, having had new identity cards made, in case her old names had been disclosed. Eve nodded, perching on the edge of the rickety table. The Germans mean to launch a massive assault in January or February of the new year. Confirmed. The target? Verdun. Eve shivered slightly. There was something about the name of that place she'd never seen. A flat finality. It sounds like a killing ground. But it wouldn't be if the generals were forewarned.
Perhaps Verdun would mark the end of the killing.
It's a risk to you passing this on, Lily judged.
Not all Eve's information could be passed. Not if acting on it might expose a leak in Lilité.
This is important, Eve answered. It's for information like this that we didn't beg to go home.
Lily waved that, but finally assented.
I was already scheduled to meet Uncle Edward in Tournai in 2 days. You'll have to come with me. For something like this, they'll question us both, as they did for the Kaiser report.
Eve nodded. It would be over a Sunday. She'd miss no work.
Can you get an extra safe conduct pass in time?
My contact hasn't let me down yet, bless him.
Eve gnawed at her thumbnail, already bitten to the quick. Perhaps it was Violette's arrest, or perhaps the vicious cold of October, but she'd been fighting a wave of superstitious dread all week. Was Christine giving her a suspicious look at work, not just a scornful one? That German lieutenant who stopped talking so suddenly when Eve came with his coffee, was he aware she'd been listening? Had René, who had been so solicitous lately, sniffed out one of her lies and decided to lull her into a false sense of security before pouncing? Get hold of yourself. It was a late night with René that evening. He built a fire in his chamber against the cold and read A Rebours aloud to Eve, occasionally putting down the book to reenact some of Hauschmann's more depraved passages. Eve was more bored by depravity than titillated by it, but Marguerite was suitably wide-eyed and uncertain, and René seemed pleased.
"You're coming along nicely, pet," he murmured,
running a fingertip around her earlobe.
"Perhaps we should retire to the country for a while, like Hauschmann's hero, eh? Somewhere warmer than Limoges, where we can enjoy ourselves without all this Teutonic dreariness. Grasse is very pleasant this time of year. The smell of flowers comes on the wind from every direction. I always thought I'd retire in Grasse, once I had my fill of the restaurant business. I have a dilapidated bit of property there already, just aching to be built up into a little jewel of a villa someday. Would you like to go to Grasse, Marguerite?"
"Anywhere warm," Eve shivered.
"You're always cold these days."
René's hand slowed, tracing over her skin.
"You aren't pregnant, are you?"
That came closer to surprising Eve into an unguarded reaction than anything in a long time. She barely managed not to flinch in utter revulsion.
"No,"
she said, and added a fluttery laugh.
If you were, it wouldn't be a tragedy, pet."
He spread his hand flat over her stomach, his long fingers spanning from hip bone to hip bone.
"I've never considered myself especially paternal, but a man reaches a certain age and begins to consider his legacy. Or perhaps I've merely become pensive in this dreary weather. Turn over, will you?"
I was right not to tell him, Eve thought, even as she began moving under his touch. He might have sent her off like some pampered broodmare, and where would she be now? It was nearly dawn by the time Eve slipped away. There would be no time to sleep. She quickly wrapped up a false package to give herself something to juggle at the checkpoint, and set out for the station. Lily was late, and Eve was suppressing panic by the time she saw the familiar figure slip down from a carriage. It was a cold, foggy morning, and the droplets of moisture seemed to cling to Lily's straw hat, her smoke-blue coat. She looked extraordinarily small, striding through the wisps of mist. "We have a problem," she said, lowering her voice to a murmur no passerby could overhear. "Only one safe conduct pass to be had. It gives permission to travel to Tournai, but it's just for one."
"You take it. I don't need to come."
"You do, for a report like this. They'll insist on questioning the source."
"I'll go alone, then. You've never worked a checkpoint on your own before. The guards are very edgy these days, and they aren't used to seeing you come and go as they are me. That itching tongue could get you looked at. If you get into trouble, I want to be there to talk you out of it."
Lily hesitated, gnawing on her lip.
"We can't just let it wait till next week's rounds. Not something important like this. If we bluff our way through on one safe conduct pass here, we can easily get another in Tournai to get home.
Eve eyed the German sentries at the station across the street. They looked wet and sullen. In a mood to be spiteful, perhaps. But also cold and miserable enough to be careless. I say we do it.
So do I. Take the pass, little Daisy, and get in line. Stay 3 people ahead, and don't look back.
A few quick instructions, then Eve moved across the street, making her way through a group of little boys playing tag around the square, despite the cold mist. Eve juggled her package, managing a covert glimpse as Lily grabbed the end of a green scarf as it whisked by, reeling in one of the dashing boys. A whisper in the boy's ear, a coin in his hand too, though Lily concealed that deftly, and the child bolted off again. Lily moved to join the line, and Eve was suddenly so nervous she could hardly stand. She hammered the fear flat. The sentry honked his nose in a vast handkerchief, clearly fighting off a cold. Eve kept herself small and deferential, handing over her safe conduct pass without a murmur. He scanned it and waved her through. Her blood leaped and she turned her back to the sentries, pretending to tuck the paper back into her pocketbook, but keeping it folded tight and small between gloved fingers. In a moment, the little boy with the green scarf bumped past the Germans. They barely noticed the children, except to swat them out of the way, and ran smack into Eve, knocking himself over and the package from her arms.
Up you go!
Eve set him back on his feet, brushing the mud off his sleeve, and the folded safe conduct pass slid invisibly up his cuff.
Be more careful, she admonished,
her voice sounding horribly stagey to her own ears as she picked up her package, and the child went careening off again. A sprinted circle round the square. Lily must have told him not to move too directly to his target. And then he was bumping into Lily, who seized him by the wrist to administer a scolding. Eve watched through her lashes, and even when looking for it, she couldn't see Lily slip the pass out of the boy's sleeve. But she had it 5 minutes later, when she came to the head of the line. Eve's heart beat again like a gong as the German sentry flicked his eyes over the safe conduct pass. It had no identifying photograph. It was just a piece of paper allowing passage. They all looked alike. Surely he wouldn't notice the same one twice. Violent relief pierced her as he honked his nose and waved Lily through.
See?
Lily whispered under cover of the train's piercing whistle, coming to join Eve.
They are too stupid. Shove any bit of paper under their nose, and you can always get through.
Eve laughed a bit too giddily in her relief.
Can you find a joke in absolutely everything?
So far, Lily said airily.
Shall we have time to buy silly hats in Tournai, do you think? I long for a pink satin.
Eve was still laughing when it happened. Later she wondered if it was her laughter that drew their eyes, if she was too free and easy. Later she wondered, what could I have done? Later she thought, if only... A German voice sounded behind them, cutting off Eve's laughter like a knife.
Your papers, Fräuleins.
Lily turned, blonde brows rising. This wasn't the sneezing sentry, but a young captain with a razor-neat uniform. Beads of mist clung to the brim of his cap, and his face was hard and suspicious. Eve saw the nick in his chin where he'd cut himself shaving, saw that he had very pale lashes, and her tongue turned to stone. If she tried to speak, she would not get a single word before it stuttered like one of those Shusha machine guns mounding up dead soldiers in the trenches. But Lily spoke, and her voice was easy and impatient.
Papers?
Pointing in annoyance at the sentry.
We've already shown them there.
The captain put out his hand.
You will show me, nonetheless.
Lily bristled, an offended little French housewife.
Who are you?
He glowered.
If you have passports, I want to see.
That's it, Eve thought, and the terror was so all-encompassing it felt almost calming. There could be no bluffing past the fact that she had no pass.
They're going to take me. They're going to take me.
She raised her eyes as Lily handed her own safe conduct pass over to the captain. As he bent his head to examine it, Lily's and Eve's eyes met. When they take me, walk away, Eve did her best to telegraph.
Walk away.
And Lily smiled, that impish lightning flash of a smile,
It's her pass, she said clearly. I borrowed it illegally, you stupid Hun.
Chapter 25. Charlie. May 1947.
She was dead. My best friend in the whole world. Dead. It wasn't enough that the ravenous war had reached out with greedy fingers and stolen my brother from me. The same beast had gobbled up Rose, too, taken the girl I loved like a sister and riddled her with bullets. I think I might have stood in numbed horror forever, there on that patch of tainted grass, pinioned between the church's bullet-pocked wall and the figure of Madame Ruffonche. She might as well have been a pillar of salt like Lot's wife, made immobile and monstrous by what she should never have seen. I could feel a scream scraping up my throat like a rusty blade, but before I could release it, Finn shook me hard. I stared up at him, dazed.
Charlie,
I could see him saying.
Charlie, lass.
But I couldn't hear him. My ears felt like they'd been shelled. All I heard was a monstrous buzzing. Madame Ruffonche was still staring at me calmly. She deserved my thanks for bearing witness. She deserved balm for her pain and medals for her courage. But I couldn't look at her. She'd been with Rose at the end, seen Rose fall. Why her and not me? Why hadn't I been here, facing the Nazis with Rose? Why hadn't I been at James's side either, listening to him rage, telling him I loved him, drowning out the terrible cacophony of his memories? I loved them both so much, and I'd failed them so utterly. I'd let my brother go out alone on a cold night, not going for a beer, as he'd mumbled to me, but for a bullet. I'd thought I might redeem that mistake by finding Rose when everyone else gave up hope. But I'd redeemed nothing. In a Provençal café, I told Rose I wouldn't leave her, but I had. I'd let an ocean and a war come between us, and now she was dead too. I'd lost them all. Failed, the harsh voice said in my head, over and over, the litany to which I'd been living. Failed. I put my hands on Madame Ruffonche's arm, giving a mute squeeze. All the thanks I could summon. Then I tore away and took off toward the street, stumbling as I ran. I fell over an abandoned flower pot, a broken earthenware thing that had probably been filled with scarlet geraniums on the doorstep of a French housewife who got gunned down on that June 10th. I scraped my hands, but I pushed upright and kept stumbling. I saw the shape of a car through my tear-blurred eyes and veered toward it, only to realize that it wasn't the Lagonda, but the abandoned Peugeot. Rusting since the day its owner had been rounded up in a field and shot. I stumbled back from that innocent, horrible car, looking wildly around me for the Lagonda. And that was when Finn caught up to me, pulling me into his arms. I buried my face in his rough shirt, squeezing my eyes shut. "Get me out of here," I said, or tried to say. What came out was a garble of harsh sobbing sounds, barely words at all. But Finn seemed to understand. He scooped me up off my feet and carried me to the Lagonda, lowering me into the seat without opening the door, then flung himself in behind the wheel. I shut my eyes tight and inhaled the comforting smells of leather and motor oil, curling against the seat as Finn roughly threw the car into gear. He drove as though a horde of ghosts was coming after us, and they were. Oh God, they were. In the forefront, in my mind's eye, was a baby just old enough to toddle. She was lifting her arms toward me, wanting her Tante Charlotte, but the top of her head was blown off. Rose had named her after me, and now she was dead. She'd been dead close to 3 years. I made another inarticulate sound as we bumped and rattled over the river. Everything that had driven me here had been a lie. Once we were clear of Oradour-sur-Glane, Finn pulled up crookedly at the nearest roadside auberge and got us a room for the night.
Maybe the proprietor saw the wedding ring on my hand. Mrs. Donald McGowan. Rose was never going to laugh at my Donald. Or maybe he didn't care.
I stumbled into a threadbare chamber and was stopped, swaying and tear-blurred by the side of the bed. "I'm going to dream," I whispered as Finn came up behind me. "As soon as I go to sleep, I'm going to dream. Dream of her the way she..." I stopped, squeezing my eyes shut.
clutching after my old comforting numbness. But it had shattered utterly. Tears doubled me over in great waves. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't see. "Don't let me dream," I begged, and Finn took my face between his big hands.
"You won't dream tonight,"
he said, and I saw tears in his eyes, too.
"I promise."
He found a bottle of whiskey somewhere and brought it back to the room.
We didn't bother with supper. We just kicked off our shoes, climbed onto the bed, sat our backs against the wall, and started methodically drinking our way through the bottle.
Sometimes I wept, and sometimes I just stared at the window, which went from daylit to twilight blue to night black and star-filled. Sometimes I talked, recounting memories of Rose like rosary beads. And after that it was memories of James. And soon I was weeping again for them both. Finn let me talk and cry and talk some more, sliding my boneless body down so my head was pillowed in his lap. I looked up at some point around midnight and saw silent tears sliding down his still face.
"That place," he said softly.
"Jesus Christ, that place."
I reached up, smoothing his wet cheek. "Have you ever seen a worse one?" He was silent for so long I didn't think he was going to answer. Then he drank the rest of his whiskey in a sharp movement and said,
"Yes."
I wasn't sure I wanted to know what could be worse than Oradour sur Glane, but he was already talking.
"Royal Artillery, 63rd Anti-Tank Regiment."
His big hand stroked my hair.
"April, 45. We were in northern Germany, near Celle. You heard about the death camps?"
"Yes."
"We liberated one. Belsen."
I sat up, hugging my knees to my chest. He paused, blinked.
"Sioux Troop. We were the first military through the gates after the medics. We saw a ghost town. Like what you and I saw today. But there were living ghosts at Belsen."
He spoke as flatly as Madame Ruffange had that afternoon, the repetitive cadence of ground-in horror.
"Thousands of people, animated skeletons in striped grey uniforms, just drifting through piles of bodies. Bodies stacked everywhere like heaps of rag and bone. Even the ones still walking about didn't look alive. They just wafted. It was all so quiet."
Pause. Blink.
"The sun was shining, like today."
Tears were slipping out of my eyes again. Useless tears. What good do the tears do all those dead? The ones in Oradour sur Glane, and the ones in Belsen. James, Rose. Damn the war.
"There was a gypsy girl lying on the ground," Finn went on. "I only learned later that she was a gypsy, because someone told me what her prisoner badge meant. For gypsy women, it was a dark triangle with a Z for Zigeuner. She's not really a woman, though, just a lass, maybe 15. But she looks like she's 100 years old, just a wee sack of bones and a bald skull and huge eyes. She's staring up at me, eyes like stones at the bottom of a well, and her hand is resting on my boot like a white spider. And she dies, right there. Her life slips away as we stare at each other. I'm here to rescue her, my regiment and me, and that's when she dies. She lives for so much, and she dies now."
I guessed it was always now, whenever he thought of the gypsy girl. Every time he thought of those hollow eyes and the white spider of a hand on his boot, she was dying in the present, in his head, over and over again.
"I've blocked out a lot of it."
His voice had roughened, the Scots burr thick and blurred.
"But he wasn't trying, he just... the details, they blurred. Grave digging, carrying bodies out of huts, delousing people and trying to feed them. But the gypsy lass, I remember her. She stands out."
I had no words to comfort him. Maybe there weren't any. Maybe the only solace was touch. The warmth that said, "I'm here." I reached out and took his hand between mine, gripping it tight.
"The smell..."
A shudder racked the whole rangy length of his body.
"Typhus and death and rot, and liquid shite lying everywhere in pools."
He looked at me, dark eyes bottomless.
"Be glad you got here to Oradour sur Glane 3 years after, Charlie lass."
You saw the sunlight and the quiet and the ghosts, but you didn't get the smell.
That seemed to be the end of anything he had to say. I poured us both more whiskey. We tossed it down, seeking oblivion as fast as possible. "Salut," Rose said. But no, she wasn't saying anything. She was dead, and so was Finn's gypsy girl.
I laid my head back in his lap once the room started to spin, and he sat stroking my hair.
The moon slid over the window, getting brighter and brighter, until I realized it was the sun, and already halfway up, coming through the window in bright rays that stabbed my eyes like swords. I blinked, trying to get my bearings. I lay tangled up with Finn on top of the sheets, both of us still fully dressed, his arm thrown loose over my waist, and my face against his ribs, which were moving in and out in sleep. My head was splitting. My stomach lurched as I disentangled myself, and I barely made it off the bed and over to the sink in the opposite corner. I threw up, and then threw up again, gagging on the sour taste of half-digested whiskey. Soon Finn was sitting up.
"You look a wee bit ill," he observed.
I managed to glare between heaves. He unfolded from the bed and came toward me, shirt half-buttoned and his feet bare, and he gathered back my dangling hair as I bent over the sink again.
"Any dreams?" he asked quietly.
"No." I straightened, wiping my mouth and reaching for the water glass, not quite meeting his eyes. "You?" He shook his head. We couldn't either of us look at the other as we set about washing up. We were like a couple of unhealed stumps trying not to bump into each other, raw and hurting, and I couldn't turn my head without a jolt of pain. "Rose," I thought. And there was another jolt of pain, dull and profoundly shocking. It hadn't been a nightmare. I had slept. I had woken, and it was real. There hadn't been any nightmares, just true horrors. My eyes burned, but I didn't have any more tears. Just a vast, looming question. We got ourselves washed and tidied, and Finn brought cups of black coffee wheedled from the proprietor. My roiling stomach grudgingly accepted the coffee, and soon we were back in the car, Finn turning mutely for Limoges. I sat there in my wrinkled, day-old clothes, rubbing at my splitting temples, pondering the question now staring me in the face. "What now, Charlie Sinclair? What now?" It was a quiet drive back. I found myself staring at the city's summertime loveliness as though it were a stage set. The weeping willows over the river, the half-timbered houses, and the beautiful Roman bridge Rose would have seen when she served drinks at Le Lété. I had no reason to be in this city any longer, and yet no destination to make me leave it.
"Wondered if Gardner's in," Finn said.
The first words he'd spoken since asking me if I'd dreamed. I looked at him blankly. "In from where?"
"Her meeting with that English officer from Bordeaux," Finn said. "Remember?"
I'd forgotten. Wasn't that yesterday?
Maybe it was.
We hadn't exactly planned on staying the night in the countryside. What now? The question still echoed. What now? Finn parked the Lagonda and we trailed inside. The auberge's entryway had been freshly polished. I smelled beeswax over the fresh flowers on the desk. Roses, pink roses, the color of Rose's cheeks. And my head throbbed sickly. An irritable clerk sat behind the desk, and in front of her was the kind of Englishman who thinks that if he speaks loudly enough, foreigners will automatically understand him.
"Evelyn Gardner. Is she ici? Ici, here, comprenez? Gardner."
"Oh oui, monsieur,"
the clerk said, with the air of someone who had said it before.
"Elle est ici, mais ne veut pas vous voir." "English, Anglais, anyone."
The man looked around, tall with a graying mustache, perhaps in his mid-50s, carrying a gut before him like a badge of honor, a civilian suit, but the bearing of the man inside it was aggressively soldierly. Finn and I looked at each other, and then Finn stepped forward.
"I'm Miss Gardner's driver."
"Good, good."
The man gave an up-and-down glance of disapproval at Finn's slovenly appearance, but his tone was cordial enough.
"Tell Miss Gardner I'm here, please. She'll see me." "She won't," Finn said.
The man stared, mustache bristling.
"Of course she will. I saw her at dinner just last bloody night. We were perfectly cordial."
Finn shrugged.
"She evidently doesn't want to see you now.
See here, you don't pay my wages. She does."
The French clerk rolled her eyes behind the Englishman's back. I stepped forward, curiosity making its way through my fog of grief.
"Sir, you wouldn't happen to be Captain Cameron?"
He didn't match the image I'd been building of Cameron. But what other English officer would come running from Bordeaux on Eve's call?
"Cameron? That sad old fraud?"
The visitor gave a snort, contemptuous.
"I'm Major George Allenton, and I'm wasting valuable time here, so you scamper up those stairs, girl, and tell Miss Gardner I'm here."
"No."
It sounded like insolence, but it was just exhaustion. Quite honestly, I didn't see why I should stir a finger for anyone this rude. I was glad he wasn't Captain Cameron. I liked Eve's stories of him. The major looked at me, face reddening, and he opened his mouth as if to argue. But all at once he deflated.
"Fine," he said, fumbling in his pocket. "You tell that sour, skinny old maid the war office owes her no more favors, regardless of what she's done for us in the past."
He slapped a flat black case into my hand.
"And she can throw these down the loo if she likes, but I'm done keeping them for her."
"When did you know her?"
Finn asked as the major clapped his hat to his head.
"Both wars. She worked for me. And I wish she'd never been recruited for the first one, that hitch-tongued, deceitful bitch."
Finn and I stared at each other as the major stamped away. Finally, I opened the case, expecting to see... what? Jewels? Documents? A ticking bomb? With Eve, you never knew. But it was medals. Four of them, pinned precisely across a card.
"The Medaille de Guerre. The Croix de Guerre with palm. The Croix de la Légion d'honneur."
Finn let out a low whistle.
"And that's the Order of the British Empire."
I released a slow breath. Eve wasn't just a former spy. She was a decorated heroine, a legend of the past for whom senior army officers still jumped, even if they disliked her. I touched the OBE with a fingertip. If she'd been awarded these years ago, why wouldn't she take them?
I don't know.
Chapter 26. Eve. October 1915. Lily managed one muttered instruction as she and Eve were frog-marched into the station. The Germans were shouting, alarms blared, and under the furore, Lily murmured through motionless lips, "Pretend you don't know me. I'll get you out of this." Eve gave a minuscule shake of the head, not daring to look at Lily. They were being rushed along by a pair of hulking soldiers. Lily half-hoisted off her feet, Eve's arms in such a tight grip her hands were going numb. The terror hadn't quite caught up yet. Eve's thoughts darted like mice at a sudden light. But her refusal came reflexively. She could not walk away free, leaving Lily in German hands. Never. But another burst of shouting came, and Lily's lips shaped one word. Verdun. Eve froze. The massive attack planned against Verdun next year. Captain Cameron and Tournay, waiting for the report. The paper slip with all the attack's details, wrapped around the inner band of a ring on Lily's right hand. Dear God, if the Germans found that! But there was no more time to think, to exchange so much as a desperate glance. They were hustled inside the station, past a telephone and a cluster of German soldiers. And the German captain snapped orders.
"Separate them. I will put out a warning."
Eve found herself flung into a narrow room overlooking the street. A half dozen German soldiers were there already, partially dressed, yawning through their morning routine. A young blonde sergeant in his undershirt gaped at Eve, and another was shaving in a bucket of water. Eve stared back, keeping her eyes from hunting for an escape. There was none. They'd be on her like a pack of wolves as she moved an inch toward the window. To her left was another door with a glass pane, looking into an even smaller room, and Eve's throat closed as she saw Lily shoved inside. Her hat was gone, and her blonde hair coming down in a tangle. She looked like a child playing dress-up in her mother's skirt and blouse. But she caught herself against the room's long counter, eyes glittering and her mouth curving in a smile, and she stripped off her gloves as though preparing to sit down to tea.
"No one touch me!"
Eve cried out suddenly, eyes flying among the German soldiers around her. None of them had made a move. They were all too surprised. But she gave a shrill scream anyway. She wanted them looking at her, not through the window at Lily, who was swiftly prizing off the ring on her right hand and going for the slip of paper wrapped around its band.
"Don't touch me!"
Eve shrieked, and the youngest soldier stepped forward as if in reassurance. Eve stared past him at Lily, who still smiled that half-smile. She watched as her companion popped the paper slip into her mouth and swallowed it. The German captain flew screaming to the door of Lily's cell before Eve could feel any pangs of relief. He saw. He saw. Gripping Lily by the neck, the captain tried to force his fingers into her mouth. She sealed her teeth, baring them at him like a wolverine, and he flung her away in disgust. Boots stamped through the corridor outside in a rush, and Eve sank to the floor and started to sob. Not just because Lily had been caught disposing of a message, but because Marguerite would sob. Marguerite would be terrified and innocent, and have no idea who that woman in the other room was. Eve wanted to fly at these German pigs and tear their throats out, but she had a job to do. Verdun. So she huddled against the floor, weeping as German boots moved uneasily about her. The soldiers stared and murmured, which Eve ignored because, of course, Marguerite understood no German past Ja and Nein. Her every screaming nerve focused on the next room where there was no sound, none at all, from the leader of the Alice Network. "They won't know she's its leader," Eve thought harshly. "They don't know what a prize they have in her." But she still saw a nightmare image of Lily shoved up against a wall like Edith Cavell, blindfolded, her hands bound, an X marked on her bosom for the guns to aim at. Lily crumpling to the ground, probably still smiling. "No," Eve screamed inside, but she knew how to use her own horror, how to let the image bring another flood of tears. Tears and abject helplessness would help more than any show of courage. No one feared a helpless, weeping girl. It wasn't long before a policeman came, and with him a grim-looking woman in green serge, whom Eve recognized. She frequently assisted at German checkpoints. A merciless bitch Lily had nicknamed the Frog for her green uniform and greedy pad-like fingers as she searched people's belongings. She looked down at Eve now, hard-faced, and barked out one word in French. "Undress."
"Here."
Eve rose, swollen-eyed and hugging herself, shrinking away from all the curious men.
"I
undress," the Frog snapped. But the policeman looked vaguely ashamed and ordered the soldiers out. Eve was left alone with the Frog, who started wrenching at her buttons.
"If you are carrying messages like that other bitch," she warned, "I'll find them, and it'll be the firing squad for you."
She stripped Eve's shirtwaist off, showing the frayed chemise underneath, and Eve loosened her own skirt with clumsy fingers. This cannot be real. She was just putting on this skirt a few hours ago, before the dying fire in René's chamber, as he wrinkled his nose at her underclothes and said,
"You look like a charity school wretch, my pet. I'm getting you a proper chemise, something with Valenciennes lace."
Eve was swamped by a wave of dizziness, and promptly went with it, pitching over onto the floor as though fainting. She curled up, moaning faintly as the Frog stripped the rest of her clothes away, and performed a humiliatingly thorough search.
"Verdun,"
Eve thought, eyes squeezed shut, as the woman's hard fingers probed the undersides of her breasts and between her fingers and roughly through her hair.
"Verdun,"
she thought as her hairpins were yanked out one by one. Thank God she wasn't carrying information around a pin this time. It didn't take long, perhaps 10 minutes, as the Frog searched first Eve's body, and then her clothes, her skirt hem for lumps, her shoe heels for paper slips. At last a sharp slap stung Eve's cheek, and she opened her eyes, still leaking tears.
Get dressed, the frog said, looking disappointed.
Eve sat up, hugging her own nakedness.
Can I have a glass of...
The frog mocked her stammer.
Glass of what, my girl?
Water, Eve cried, snivelling away, and could have kissed the bitch for her mockery.
Let them think me an idiot. Just a stupid girl who let a stranger borrow her pass. Want water?
The frog pointed to the glass of scummy liquid where the dressing soldiers had clearly dunked their toothbrushes.
Help yourself.
She left with a laugh at her own wit. Eve dressed stiffly. On the outside, Marguerite Lefrancois trembled and shivered, barely functioning, while inside Evelyn Gardner's mind raced along like a high-speed train. She looked through to the next room, where the frog was marching in on Lily, and was very much afraid she knew what Lily planned to do. The frog barked at Lily to undress.
You'll resist, Eve thought.
Lily stood still as a pillar, refusing to move. The frog seized the much smaller woman and yanked at her skirt.
You'll keep resisting, Eve thought.
Lily struggled, but the frog was stout and heavy-handed, and she wrenched Lily out of her clothes piece by piece. Lily stopped thrashing, but she didn't cower in nakedness as Eve had. She held herself straight and stoic as the frog patted her down. Every rib was visible, and the bones of her sternum jutted out like a ladder. So small. The frog moved onto the pile of clothing atop the satchel, shoving the smaller woman so hard out of the way that Lily staggered. But her contemptuous smile never faded, even as she watched her satchel ransacked.
Don't find anything, Eve prayed.
But the cries went up as the rifled satchel delivered Lily's identification cards, 5 or 6 of them, held in preparation for swift crossings. The frog waved the cards in Lily's face, shrieking, but Lily just stared back, impassive. Eventually they allowed Lily to dress, and as she did up the final buttons at her throat, a man entered with a cup in hand. Eve had angled herself so she could watch through the curtain of her loose hair, even as she huddled weeping. And she recognized the newcomer, Herr Rotzeler, chief of police in nearby Tournai. Eve had seen him only at a distance in Lille, but she had compiled a report on him from comments dropped by other officers. A small, dark man, dressed with care in a well-cut jacket. His eyes were piercing, and they devoured Lily.
Mademoiselle, he said in French. Are you thirsty?
He proffered the cup in his hand. Even through the glass, Eve saw it had a curdled yellow tint, something to make Lily vomit up that message she'd swallowed.
Thank you, monsieur, Lily said politely. I am not thirsty, at least not for milk. Have you any brandy? It's been an absolute pisser of a day.
Just as she had said when she first met Eve in Le Havre. Eve could see the two of them in that stuffy café, the rain pouring down outside, Lily in her outrageous cartwheel of a hat. Her memory stabbed like a knife. Welcome to the Alice Network.
Come, no fuss.
Herr Rotzeler tried to sound jocular, pushing the cup out.
Swallow or save I?
The frog shook Lily by the elbow, but Lily just smiled and shook her head. Herr Rotzeler sprang at her, trying to force the cup between her lips as the frog yanked her head back. But Lily knocked the cup flying. Yellowed milk splashed across the floor. The frog slapped Lily, but Herr Rotzeler held up a hand.
We'll take her for questioning, he said,
and Eve's heart gave a great lurch.
Her and the other one. Her, Lily snorted. She's a stupid little shop girl, not a spy. I chatted her up because she was the only one in line who looked half-witted enough to share her safe conduct pass.
Herr Rotzeler glanced through the glass where Eve huddled, crying.
Bring her here.
The frog burst through the adjoining door, seizing Eve by the elbow and bundling her into Lily's cell. Eve went to her knees before the chief of police, pushing her hiccuping sobs up to outright wails. She found hysteria surprisingly easy to muster. Inside, she was ice-bound, watching the blubbering mess on the outside. Through her puffy eyes, she could see Lily's small, bare foot, not 6 inches away.
Mademoiselle!
Carrozzella tried to catch Eve's eyes, but she just cringed.
Mademoiselle Francois, if that is your true name. I recognize her, sir.
Another German voice volunteered. The young captain had entered, the one who'd seized them in the first place. Was that why he crossed for a closer look at their papers? Because he recognized Eve? My fault. My fault.
She lives on the Rue Saint-Cloud. I remember her from inspections. A respectable girl. Marguerite Lefrançois.
Herotzela fingered Eve's identity cards, jerking his chin at Lily.
Do you know this woman?
N-n-n. It felt like betrayal, the word forming on Eve's lips. N-n. It felt like a kiss of betrayal to Lily's cheek, like 30 pieces of silver weighing her tongue down, sour and metallic. No, Eve whispered.
Of course she doesn't know me.
Lily sounded brusque, bored.
I never saw her before today. You think I'd try to cross a checkpoint with a stuttering idiot?
Herotzela looked at Eve, hair sticking to her wet cheeks, hands trembling so hard she looked like she was being run through with electrical current.
Where were you going, girl?
Ch-ch-ch-
For God's sake, can you not speak straight? Where were you going?
Ch-ch-ch- It was no act. Eve's tongue had never hitched so badly in her life.
My niece's my niece's communion. Tournée? Yes. Yes, Herr.
You have family there.
It took Eve whole minutes to answer. Herr Rotzela shifted from foot to foot. Lily looked impassive, but Eve could sense the tension humming through her taut as a wire. She stood an agonizing arm's length away, but her thoughts were clear as glass. Keep blubbering, little Daisy. Just keep blubbering. Herr Rotzela tried to ask more questions, but Eve collapsed into hysterical sobs, sinking down on the floor. The board smelled harsh and antiseptic. She whimpered like a kicked puppy. Her pulse was slow and cold.
Oh, for God's sake!
Herotzela made a disgusted gesture to the young captain.
Write the girl a new safe conduct pass to Tournée, and turn her loose.
He turned back to Lily, eyes gleaming.
You, Mademoiselle Lesbienne, are going to answer some questions. We have other friends of yours.
Violette, Eve thought, even as the German captain helped her up.
And things will go hard with them if you refuse to talk.
Lily regarded the chief of police.
You lie, she said finally. Because you are afraid. That's good, Herr Rotzela. I will say nothing more.
Her eyes passed across Eve's, and there was a salute in them. Then she looked at the wall and sealed her mouth like a stone. Herr Rotzela seized her by the arms and began to shake her then, so hard her head snapped back and forth.
You are a spy, a filthy spy. You are going to talk.
But Lily said nothing, and then Eve was marched out of the room, sobbing so hard she could not speak. This time the sobs were very real. The captain gave her a stern lecture on the dangers of sharing official documentation, then seemed to relent in the face of her ceaseless tears. Partly in exasperation, partly in pity.
This is no place for a young girl, he said,
snapping his fingers at the clerks to issue a new safe conduct pass.
You were very foolish, mademoiselle, but I'm sorry about all this unpleasantness.
Eve could not stop weeping. Lily, she thought wretchedly. Oh, Lily! She wanted to wrench her arm away, turn and sprint back into that room where she could hear Rotzela still ranting. She wanted to tear his throat out with her teeth, but she stayed where she was, crying into her hands as the German captain fussed and fluttered.
Go home, he said again,
pressing the new safe conduct pass into her palm, clearly wanting her out of his hair as fast as possible.
Go to Tournée, but your parents. Go home.
And Eve, clutching her new pass and feeling like Judas, turned her back on her friend and walked out of German captivity. The meeting house in Tournai was small.